Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friend, Richard Pollock, and we have no idea where Ezra Ginsberg is.
Ezra was with us about 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago at the coffee shop, but we don't know where he is.
If anybody can see Ezra, that would, or find Ezra, that would be helpful.
Yeah, if you're out there.
Yeah, the show has started.
We literally left him less than 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's not like we were a different, like a long drive away. Although, let's be honest, it is Ezzy. Odds are he's been involved in a four-car pileup. I mean, it was a two-minute drive. There's minimal traffic, given that it's a Saturday morning.
There is minimal traffic.
But we have no idea
anything's wrong with Ezzy. Hopefully yes. He just got in a long conversation.
Yes, and completely lost track of time, because that would be perfectly apropos. So anyways, if you are at Starbucks...
That's not Ezzy.
That's not Ezzy. That's Michael Remus, the fourth of this conglomerate.
You know, guys, I have the report on where Ezzy is.
Where is he?
We left Starbucks at the same time. I got in my car. His car was beside me. I don't know where he is.
So he was in the car when, like, at the same time that you got in your car.
Right.
And you've been here for at least about 5 minutes setting up the Illegal Curve chat room, www.illegalcurve.com.
Yeah, I don't know where he is.
Do you think his car didn't start? Did you see his car start?
He would have BBM'd us. I hope he's okay.
Yeah.
Let's check the black... No, nothing on the Blackberries.
Nothing on the Blackberry.
Well,
Remus might need to send you on a mission.
Yeah, if anybody has seen Ezra, what kind of car does he drive again?
A Hyundai.
He was at Starbucks, so if you see Ezra, point him in the direction of the studio. The show has started. Anyways, good morning, everybody. We don't know where Ezzy is, welcome to the program. I am Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock. You just heard from Michael Remus. He's the operator of the R-Desk at www.illegalcurve.com. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Big show for you this morning, coming up at 9:30 this morning to do a post-mortem on the Washington Capitals Tampa Bay Lightning series from NHL.com. Corey Massack is going to join us.
Corey Massack used to write for the Washington Times.
That's right.
They folded their sports section. He then went over to Comcast Washington.
That's right.
And then NHL.com picked him up. So he's been in Washington based for quite a while, knows the team as well as any other writer, and we're interested to talk to him.
And he covered the series for NHL.com.
Yes.
So he'll have some great insight into that. Coming up at 11:30 this morning from the Vancouver province to discuss the Predators Canucks series, Ben Kuzma is going to be joining us.
Hold on.
Oh, Ezra.
He's in studio.
Thanks for joining us. Exactly what happened to you?
Ez, your thoughts?
Let me sit down for a second. I thought I lost my BlackBerry at Starbucks, but I don't think I brought it today.
So hold on. Did you guys take it?
Where is it?
Did you come here, go back to Starbucks, and then come back?
I thought I left my phone there, and it turns out it wasn't there, and I never had it.
You got in the car.
What do you mean?
Did you leave the Starbucks? Did you go to the? Did you come here, realize you didn't have your BlackBerry, and go back to the Starbucks?
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened, Drew. That's correct.
So you got here. Why didn't you just come here on the air and then call Starbucks during the break?
You already
have BlackBerry.
That's the million-dollar question right there.
I'll tell you what, folks. This is a Ezzy's performance through 3 minutes of this program is a good lesson in why you shouldn't drink the night before the show.
That's right.
Yeah. But Ezzy, we're glad that you're okay. I speculated you were in a car wreck, but I'm glad that you're not.
Yeah, we're happy that you're safe, Ez.
And
you look a lot better than you sounded at 7:30 in the morning today.
Are you really happy that I'm here?
Right now I am. Ask me in a couple hours. That answer might change.
Like, unless you came with one of those cartons of coffee and like cookies for all of us, we're wondering.
Yeah.
What, you got a muffin here, Richie?
Is that muffin for all of us? Is it a communal muffin?
Just for Richie. Okay. Hi, Tim, by the way. How are you?
11:30 this morning, Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver province is going to be joining us. And then the interview, the 11 o'clock interview, something you're going to definitely want to tune into, Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is going to join us. He's going to join us. We're going to talk about an update on the ownership situation in Atlanta. We, of course, the news came out of Phoenix yesterday that the city of Glendale is prepared to cover their loss, the Coyotes' losses, for yet another year.
So,
and we're here to tell you
our attention shifts, and as it should be focused now, on the Atlanta Thrashers. And we'll talk to Chris to see what the update is in Atlanta. But from all accounts, there's nothing whatsoever standing in the way of a fairly quick move of the Thrashers up north.
So while some panic about the Phoenix news, you shouldn't.
No, no. Really, focus your attention now onto the Thrashers. It was on this program, when was it? November?
Yeah, and Remus is going to pull up those clips later on in the show when we get delve deeper into the issues.
That's right. So we're going to deal with that sort of in the latter half of the show. It was on this show in November that the Deputy Commissioner of the NHL, Bill Daly, made his comments that sort of have started the snowball effect when it comes to Atlanta's future or the Thrashers' future in Atlanta. So stick with us. We're going to deal with that really in the second half of the program today. First half, we're going to sort of focus on the on-ice stuff, the on-ice action in the playoffs. Second half, more relocation. We want to hear your tweets at Illegal Curve. We want to hear your phone calls, 780-1290. We want to hear your emails, drew@illegalcurve.com.
We're going
to
read tweets on air. Good tweets.
That's
we're
right.
Read
good, if you send us a good tweet, we will read it on air. So, you know, you can certainly get in touch with us any of those ways.
And Tim, was that your cell phone or a microwave? It sounded like a microwave. Sorry to interrupt you, Drew. Didn't you hear that? I thought Tim was maybe cooking up some popcorn in here.
Well, maybe he made us some muffins because you obviously didn't bring us enough muffin.
Drew, are you going to drive home during the commercial break to see if your phone's at your BlackBerry's at home?
I can barely tell if I... Do I even own a phone?
Well, unfortunately, you do. You didn't for the longest time, and now now you're actually obsessed with it.
I'm pretty sure the woman behind us in line has my BlackBerry right now.
The ironic part of that is she already was a BBM contact of yours.
That's right.
I mean, I'm not sure how that worked, but, you know.
My newest BBM contact? Leah Hex.
Really? Our good friend Leah Hex.
Drew originally started that.
Your co-host next week.
That's right. Our Leah Hex doll is going to be sitting in this studio with us next week.
I would say that Dave M. is my co-host and Leah is my BBM contact.
That's good.
Happened to be invited
onto the
show.
Make sure next week when you're on the air, Ezzy, that you and Leah Hex don't BBM to each other and not talk.
Yeah, that would be awkward. Yeah, your BBMs don't actually automatically get read on air, so that would be a little bit awkward. Anyways, yes, that's true. Leah Hextall will be joining us on this program next Saturday. Richie and I and Remus are away, so we're leaving Ezzy in charge. Related news, next week will be our final show here on Sports Radio 1290. But Leah Hextall and Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com are going to be joining Ezzy in studio next week, so that's exciting news. Leah Hextall, I believe, is actually is drinking away her sorrows after her Philly Flyers went down with a whimper, let's say. With a whimper, 4-0 to the Boston Bruins. That's a perfect segue to talk about last night in the NHL and then look forward to tonight's game in the NHL. Let's start in Boston. Richie, you PVR'd that game.
Mm-hmm.
So you
don't know what happened yet?
Yeah, I just ruined it for you. No, you PVR'd that game because you were out. You weren't able to watch it live. You wanted to really get some good insight into what you were seeing. Boston won 5-1. That series is done. It was what did you see last night?
I saw one side of the game, Drew. I saw Boston controlling the play. I saw Boston pressuring the Philly D. I saw a more motivated team, and I saw a team in control. They were in control the whole day, the whole game. And Thomas was solid, as per the whole series, but Philly never looked into it. Their one goal was off a bad Brad Marchand turnover from Boston, but aside from that turnover, Boston's defense was not pressured very often. Interesting to see how Boston utilized their defense, and that'll be more interesting moving forward into the next series. We can talk about that in a bit, but I just thought that there was one team on the ice and the other one didn't show. And you know, for all the criticism of Sergei Bobrovsky, I mean, you know, yesterday was essentially a 3-1 game with two empty net goals. Philly's offense wasn't there. Mike Richards didn't see much of him. I see the Carter injury really hurt. Even Claude Giroux yesterday wasn't visible.
No, there was none of the will to make another comeback like there was last season.
Yeah, exactly, Drew. That's exactly right. I just didn't, you know, you watch the game and Boston was in control. Like, I mean, that's what I want to emphasize. They were in control. They imposed their will upon Philadelphia. There wasn't much of a pushback. And that's usually last year there was a pushback.
That's right.
And, you know, planting the seed of doubt. Boston never looked like they had a doubt. And Milan Lucic getting going yesterday, that's only a good sign of things to come for the Bruins because Lucic hadn't scored since, I believe, March 22nd.
Wow.
He looked like a powerhouse yesterday, scoring his goals, going to the net. You know, if he gets going, that's huge. One thing to take account of, though, is the fact that Patrice Bergeron got injured. We're not sure what the injury is.
Most reports now are saying it hasn't been confirmed given that it's the playoffs and everything.
Right.
But most reports seem to indicate that it is a concussion.
And for a guy with the concussion history of Patrice Bergeron, and of course he missed almost three-quarters of a season as a result of the concussion.
Randy Jones hitting him to the boards, yeah.
That's right. Concussions are dangerous at any time, but for a guy who's got a history of concussions like Patrice Bergeron and a franchise that's been cursed by concussions recently, that's a big loss going forward.
Well, Drew, that's exactly right. And it might not affect their ability to... Well, it'll affect any ability. I mean, they can probably get by Tampa without him. They have a chance of getting by Tampa. They couldn't beat any of the Western teams without him. So that would completely dash their Stanley Cup hopes. Because they have Stanley Cup hopes now. We're talking about an Eastern Conference finalist. They need him. Face-offs, defensively responsible. On the power play, he's been terrific. He's a great passer. Obviously the Krejci, the Lucic combination up top with Horton is going to be your number one line. But, you know, him playing with Recchi and with Marchand or however they move it around is absolutely pivotal.
Yeah.
So not having him, you know, what that does, I mean, this is a question that we have to ask, Ezzy. You can't elevate Chris Kelly into the second slot because Chris Kelly's not able to play that slot. Are you dropping Tyler Seguin into the second center slot in the middle of the playoffs? And if so, I mean, there's a lot of worse guys to drop it to.
Yeah. You're putting a lot of pressure on him, though.
I know we're going to get into this a little bit more at 9:45, but...
Yeah, no, let's just hold that thought, Ezzy. Hold that thought. We'll talk about
that. Goaltending costs in that series.
We're going to talk about the series in more detail throughout the show. Yeah, of course. We're going to talk about the series in more detail, but let's just wrap up last night in the NHL with the other game, the San Jose Sharks-Detroit Red Wings game. The Red Wings won 4-3. They prevented the sweep. Game 5 back in San Jose tomorrow evening. You know, Detroit had this game in control. San Jose fought back. Detroit finally took the lead, you know, to the winning lead with about 3 minutes to go in the game. But San Jose is not looking like a team that is going to. They're not going to give up. I don't think they're going to give up a. Detroit's going to be able to come back from three games down. Pardon me.
Well, if they were able to come back from four games down, then that would only be the fourth time in the history of the NHL that's happened.
Yep.
And it was pretty shocking. But last year, I think Philadelphia was a different team last year than Detroit is this year. But Detroit has looked like a very nervous team against San Jose. And I picked Detroit to win that series. And obviously, it's not looking good for anybody who picked Detroit. The matchups haven't been there, and when you look at guys like Brad Stewart and Nicholas Lidstrom and Brian Rafalski, they're pretty much getting outplayed by San Jose's top two lines. And
but the truth is it's been 4-1 goal games, overtime games. Yeah. We said there'd be 3 or 4 overtime games in this series. It's been 2 overtime games and 2 one goal games. So I mean they could go both ways, and I realize after some point, you know, especially considering last year's a lot of one goal games for San Jose's favor, they've been winning them all. This series has been, you know, the Ferreira, how do you pronounce his name?
Ferreira
goal was off a stick. Yeah. I mean, one bounce, two bounces, it's a 2-2 series. I don't see it being a dominating performance. I see it being a very good performance by San Jose, but Detroit's certainly in this series. Detroit can certainly win the game in San Jose, and Detroit can come back. I think they can come back. I don't think they will come back, but it's entirely possible, Drew.
Okay, we'll get to that later on in the program. We'll recap that series in more detail. Of course, tonight in the NHL, Vancouver and Nashville, Game 5 in Vancouver. Canucks have a chance to put it away on home ice. Tonight. It'll be here on Sports Radio 1290, actually. Puck drop is, I believe, 7 o'clock Winnipeg time, so pregame show to begin at 6 o'clock, if I'm not mistaken. When we come back after these commercial breaks, we're going to break down the Tampa Bay-Washington series. Corey Massasak still to come. You know, playoffs for the first half of the show, relocation for the second half. Stay with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Quarter after 9 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
And now, breaking news.
Ezzy?
This is just coming in, not from Atlanta, but this is coming in from Winnipeg. We have breaking news. My BlackBerry is actually at my house.
That's good.
I never took my BlackBerry with me, so it's confirmed that my BlackBerry is at home. It's safe. I will be able to BBM later this afternoon, so everything is good. Obviously, we're waiting for more breaking news here to come from Atlanta and Winnipeg, but this is a small piece of the puzzle.
Ezzy, correct me if I'm wrong, but do you not have the Balkan on BBM?
the Balkan, that's coming up. Well, we're going to talk to Chris Vivel more about that. But
yeah, I know.
Richard Pollock is actually the Balkan. Cat's out of the bag.
Today I'm the Balkan.
Today
I'm
the Balkan?
As he can be the Balkan.
Okay, well, the Balkan's wearing a Winnipeg Jets hat, so I suppose that's a good sign then. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as his BlackBerry is safe and sound, thank God.
I got to admit, Drew, you guys have had BlackBerries for a while, but when you don't have it, it really is, you feel naked. I feel naked right now.
Well, actually, as you're not wearing any clothes, that's why you feel naked right now. Can you put a shirt back on? That's really inappropriate.
What are your thoughts on people that have those clips for their BlackBerries? Would you ever do the clip thing?
I'm not a clipper. I think it's more of a... I think there's a demographic. There's an age gap when it comes to using a BlackBerry holster or not. I don't see very many...
You're more of a holster guy, Adrian.
What's that? A holster? Is that what you said? A holster guy? Yeah. Anyways, I don't think that you see very many... Not that I'm a young person anymore, but a quote-unquote young person with the holster for the BlackBerry. Tampa Bay, Washington, boys. I don't have our predictions up in front of me, but
I had Washington in six.
Yeah, I'm confident that nobody had Tampa Bay in four.
I took them in six, I think.
I thought it was seven.
Six is good.
The fact you had Tampa is good. I mean, look, that's an impressive prediction. Did anybody see this coming?
No, not in four. The way they dismantled Washington was, I don't think, predicted by anybody. I liked Tampa Bay in the series because I thought that Washington's big guns would be shut down, and essentially they were. Ovechkin had a few goals, a few timely goals, and the Capitals. I don't know if they. I mean, I don't really don't know what happened there because they had momentum coming in after the Rangers series, and they looked like they were ready to take that series at least to seven games. Maybe not take it, in four, but. Tampa Bay was a better team, really, in every area, I thought.
One area, I mean, there's a number of reasons why Washington got swept in this series, but one of the main areas of concern I had going into the series, and I picked Washington to win, but one of the main areas of concern I had the other way was getting out-coached. And Bruce Boudreau got out-coached. Now, responsibility lies in the players. We're going to talk about that in a second. But Bruce Boudreau was thoroughly out-coached, and he is going up against a very, very... What you're seeing in NHL now, Drew... And as what you're seeing now is smarts are winning out. Not that it wasn't before. Scotty Bowman's very bright. But the smart minds are really, the smart organizations, the smart minds are really taking over. This is not a game anymore where you can just make bio mistakes. Vancouver is doing the right kind of thing. Ray Shiro's doing the right kind of thing. Tampa Bay. They're doing it the smart way, the right way, in terms of building a team. But also, Yzerman's done it in terms of hiring a coach. Guy Boucher is very innovative. Even if, for example, when you're watching Tampa's power play and how the guys rotate through, and I rotate through, I mean a lot of movement. Defensemen will rotate down and cut in for, one-timers through the seam, and then the wingers will rotate up, and they'll cover the points, and that's why sometimes they give up a lot of shorthanded goals. But what happens is that Washington wasn't adjusting. And Pierre Maguire talked about it, and if you watch the games, you would have seen that as well, is that when the players were rotating around, sometimes Washington guys would get caught up in man-to-man, and they would get out of position because there's so much movement. They'd be moving around with the players, and there'd be huge seams and huge open spaces on the power play for Tampa Bay, as opposed to maybe Washington playing more of a zone style and locking down areas, and because that's kind of how you have to play if the teams are moving their guys around so much.
Further to your point, which is a very good point, is that if you look at the way Pittsburgh sort of handled Tampa Bay in the first round, I mean, seven-game series there, Pittsburgh obviously did something to neutralize Tampa Bay's schemes and their different way of playing on the power play and their 1-3-1 and everything else. So obviously Pittsburgh had success in doing so. Now, they ultimately didn't win simply because they didn't have the talent to be able to match up against that. Washington has the talent, but you're further to your point, it just seems like Bruce Boudreau isn't able to match up scheme-wise.
Now, also, we have to take into account the fact that maybe Bruce Boudreau is scheming a little bit better, but his players are selfish. You can't beat 1-3-1s like that, Drew. And it was in their heads. Let's make no mistake about it. Marcus Johansson's being interviewed in the middle of the second game, and Elliot Friedman asked him about it, and he says, it basically said it was in their heads. When you have a lot of selfish players, when you're not buying into the team concept, which is Bielsma had done so well without Crosby and Malkin.
Sure, because they should never have gone that far to begin with.
Right. When you're buying into a concept, you have to understand Washington wasn't. And so one guy trying to carry it in on a 1-3-1, that doesn't work. There's too much.
Is that a criticism of Alex Ovechkin?
Well, it's not just Alex Ovechkin. I mean, he was trying to do too much, and I think that's more of a as a result of the fact that his teammates were slacking.
Do you, so, I mean, in a lot of different circles, people that are knowledgeable and people that really aren't knowledgeable, because, you know, there's never any restriction on people just speaking without knowing, he's been getting a lot of criticism. Do you think that the criticism that he's been getting has been justified?
I'll jump in here, Richie, because...
Okay, you can go first, and then I want to hear from Richie on it.
I think that Alexander Ovechkin is unquestionably the second or third best player in the world. I think Sidney Crosby is the best player in the world, and when he comes back, he'll continue to be. But I personally believe that he warrants the title of second or third best player in the world. But it's been demonstrated that he is offensively selfish on the ice. But for me, the criticism is warranted because in games 2 and 3, he took minor penalties and he's undisciplined. And to me, that's also selfish. And you know, when we were heading into the playoffs and previewing the playoffs, and you know, talking about this and asking not only guests of our show about what Washington's identity was, and they became a defensive team, and their players were buying into it, and they were doing well, because at one point Washington looked like they were going to slip, you know, into the bottom of the East. But you could say a main reason why Tampa Bay and Guy Boucher obviously did outcoach Washington is shown in some of these younger players and guys that were frustrated by the fact that Tampa Bay was outplaying them. I mean, yeah, okay, there's a 1-3-1 system, you know about that. You can't, you have to find a way to get around it, and that involves the coach coming up with a strategy and the players also adapting their games. It doesn't just work by, a guy can have, you know, a 50-page book of strategies, and if the players aren't figuring it out, and the way I look at it, they were badly outcoached because the Washington pick in that series, I'm pretty sure a lot of people would have picked Washington again, Richie. Washington had more talent. You could argue that they had more talent on defense, especially.
Well,
they didn't execute.
They should have taken advantage of the Tampa Bay defense.
Where was the good John Carlson, Carl Alsner play in that series?
That's true. Well, back to the original goaltending wasn't good enough too. But back to the original point about Ovechkin. You know, Drew. Maybe they say he was trying too hard. You know, he was being selfish. I don't agree. Based on the fact that Nicklas Backstrom was completely invisible in the series, and if he was, and that's who Ovechkin played with for the majority of the series. You know, if that's who he was playing with and he clearly saw a lack of effort, he's trying to do too much to compensate for his teammates. I don't see it as being selfish so much as I see it as being, you know, trying to elevate his game at the, you know, because others aren't. I see it as if other players were at the same level
as him. He's putting too much on his own shoulders.
Yeah, and but maybe he had to based on the play of Semin and Backstrom.
If you look around at that team and the way they played through those 4 games, he seems to be the only one who really cared.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, yes, you're not going to be successful going 1-on-5, as he was trying to do, you know, to get the game-tying goal. I don't remember if it was game 3 or game 4. But, you know, it must have been game 3.
But he got in game 3. That's when he hopped in from and got...
Sorry, there was one play in particular where there was really, Tampa Bay had 5 guys lined up at the blue line, and he tried to go through all of them, and he obviously couldn't, because, you know, this isn't house league, and you're not going to be able to do that.
Of course, I realize that.
But he really did seem to be, in my opinion, to be the only capital who was giving a damn.
Well, Nicklas Backstrom's performance was embarrassing.
Well, tell us why.
He just wasn't competing.
Just was it a lack?
Stopped on the puck, wasn't competing, wasn't trying to get to places where he needed to be. It was a complete distinct lack of effort.
When you're a guy like Marcus Johansson, okay, who's 20 years old, and Backstrom is still how old? 22, 23. When you see a guy like that, I was going to say, when you see a guy like that dogging it and you know, throwing his hands up in the air and not even back checking, that's your second best player on your team. That's,
right.
That's a guy that had 100 points last
year.
That's right. What does that show to the other guys? When you're getting the ice time and it's almost like Backstrom and Semin don't know how to play hockey when they're not the only guys getting the points.
The responsibility falls on Bruce Boudreau's shoulders. First and foremost, it should fall on the players' shoulders.
And the players in this instance are specifically Backstrom and Semin more than Ovechkin, or all three of them.
No, I think more so the former, the first two rather than the latter.
Backstrom and Semin.
I mean, there are other holes in this series, and again, I don't think Bruce Boudreau should be off the hook, but I think that there should be an accountability that falls to the players first, the coach probably second, and then the GM as well. I mean, he built this team.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we have Corey Massasak of NHL.com to discuss more about this series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:30 in the morning.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Corey Massasak of NHL.com, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Corey?
Corey, are you there? No, I think we lost Corey, so we'll
Try again.
We'll try him again. Okay. Remus will try and get Corey back on the line.
And anyways, continuing on Washington, yeah, because we'll get Corey on here in a second. And we're going to ask him about Ovechkin, Backstrom, and a bunch of other players. We didn't also talk about the fact that Dennis Wiedemann wasn't in the series.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to ask Corey about.
And that was a significant injury, significant loss. He played a lot of big minutes for them. Better defensively than, you know, than a couple of players, especially Mike Green, who didn't look right and now looked like he was injured again at the end of the series. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to still like about Washington moving forward, and you don't have to blow it up by any means, but there are changes that probably need to happen or should happen.
Well, is Bruce Boudreau the coach next year?
I see George McPhee as a pretty stubborn guy about doing it his way. I see George McPhee as probably keeping Bruce Boudreau around. I'm not so sure if Boudreau is the right fit here now. I think you might need to lock it down with a defensive coach. Eric DeHatch on the Globe wrote an article about how he thinks Boudreau should be the coach. I'm not so sure in this day and age in the National Hockey League he's the tactician that you need. And I think it's really a game about outsmarting. You know, like Mike Babcock kind of said, apparently the story on Mike Babcock is, you know, it's not about, motivational tactics are obviously a factor as a coach, but they're not like they once were. And more so now it's a matter of how much you're preparing your players to play strategically, how prepared you are about the, you know, for to play against the other team and what their tendencies are and how you guard against that and how you play to your strengths and the other team's weaknesses. And I think that those coaches are the ones that succeed most right now.
Well, at some point in time, you know, in the regular season, you can get by without being a super tactician, right, when you have that much skill on the team, right, as the Capitals do. Right. And you can get by with just being a motivator, you know, giving the, you know, we saw him during the HBO 24/7 special, you know, F-bombing his way through practices, sure, and everything else. But when you get to the playoff time and the talent and the talent gap between two teams is so minimal, because, mm-hmm, I mean, on paper, you know, Washington might be a little bit more talented, but not dramatically so.
Right.
You know, at some point in time, it does boil down to X's and O's, and the coach has to make a difference.
See, I think that earlier on in the season, if you would have asked me about Bruce Boudreau, I would have said that maybe the players are tuning him out, and maybe they need someone else in there, maybe someone who's got a different approach. You can tell, you can see, especially the contrasting of styles between Guy Boucher and Bruce Boudreau, you can tell that Guy Boucher's approach to coaching is very different than Bruce Boudreau. You can tell that he's a very intense guy. He likes to individually talk to his players. Yeah. Bruce Boudreau's kind of a little bit of an old school guy, and that's not just that's not just, you know, speaking to the difference in their ages. Their approach is completely different. And I, to be honest with you, Richie, I think that, you know, if they're going to make a change, they have to address the culture of that team, because the way I look at it, that the culture of that team, there's something wrong there when your top guys are, you can't have your top guys doing, you can't have lazy players defensively that are also your best players. You just can't have that.
And you think about Jason Arnott. I mean, Jason Arnott comes in there and everybody talked about how they had tightened up defensively, and Jason Arnott said even when he came there, this is tightened up defensively, this is the team.
He couldn't believe how loosey-goosey it was. And that works, you know, against the also-rans of the NHL. Yep. It doesn't work against when you're outcoached and when we have a talent level. I mean,
and
look, everybody's talking about...
And the other teams are competing harder.
Oh, Martin St. Louis, Steven Stamkos, and Vinny LeCavalier. You know, that's a lot of... that. You know, I'll put those three up against Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Semin.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, those
I agree.
You
know, LeCavalier looks good. Really good.
I mean, and St. Louis, I mean, just does it year in, year out.
Well, he just tries so hard. I mean, but Ovechkin tries so hard. I think that the Stamkos really came into his own. He's adjusting to the speed of the game. You know, Backstrom's been doing this for a few years now, so Stamkos' first playoffs.
That's right. I mean, so, you know, it takes him a series to get his legs under him and the pressure and everything else.
But, Drew, you know what? You make a good point, though. If you take the top three offensive players on Tampa Bay, you could probably say that they get the edge. And they might even get, you could say they get a slight edge, or you can say they get more of a large edge. But the fact is, when you remember this series, you're going to remember those guys on Washington that were dogging it defensively.
Absolutely. I think we've been able to reach Corey on the line now. Corey Massasak, NHL.com. Can you hear us?
I can definitely hear
you. There you go, Corey. Sorry about those technical difficulties. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, as always. Corey, we were talking about this last segment and a bit before, really about the criticism that Alex Ovechkin got. Do you think he deserved that criticism? Do you think that he was playing a selfish game in the first round? Second round.
Yeah, no, you know what? It's interesting. It seemed like there hadn't been a whole lot criticism of him, from what I saw, maybe mostly just in more of the local stuff in D.C. or whatever, but... I mean, I think, I feel like he played okay, but not well enough. You know, I mean, for being the guy who's the captain and supposed to be maybe the best player in the world, it seems like it's happened a couple of times during this tenure of theirs where, he doesn't play as well as he could, but there are other guys who can be bigger scapegoats, so he kind of, maybe doesn't get as much of the criticism as maybe he deserves or could have. But, I mean, I just didn't think, he froze. He had a great second period in Game 3 down there in Tampa. But otherwise, I just didn't think he seemed like he really struggled to have the type of impact that he normally has. And, he was on the ice for basically the critical goal of the season. And, if you go back and watch the highlights of it, he didn't play a whole lot of defense on that goal, to put it mildly.
You know, Corey, I didn't know the Capitals offered paid vacation until I watched Nicholas Backstrom play all year. What happened there? I mean, what is the reason for his struggles consistently all regular season and then into the playoffs?
Yeah, I think the stuff in the regular season was kind of a byproduct of the whole team. I mean, you look at just down the line, none of those guys, outside of maybe Mike Knubel, even had remotely close to the numbers that they've had in the past. We were told it was because they were, there was this more defensive system and, they were sacrificing offense to be better defensively, and that was going to help in the playoffs. And, obviously that didn't really work out. I think at the end of the season, he played through a broken thumb, and then he, may or may not have re-injured it again during the Ranger series. I think a lot of it was mental, once we got further on into the playoffs. But I think the other thing, too, is the guy went from being, a kid to being a guy on a 10-year, $67 million contract, mm-hmm. in a matter of one off season, and it's a little different being just one of the young up and coming players on the team and being the guy who's the $6.7 million center. So I don't know, maybe he needs a summer to rethink how he's going to handle that, or maybe it was just the thumb. I mean, it seems like it could be a combination of anything, but they certainly are going to need more from him moving forward.
Corey, Ovi obviously wears the C, but, there's a lot of Washington Capitals fans who are pretty upset about the way the series turned out. Who are the other real internal leaders on this team, and who's a guy in the dressing room, for the Capitals that's getting on a guy like Backstrom for basically being pretty lazy defensively?
Yeah, I think the great part about the HBO show 24/7 was he kind of got a glimpse of how things work. And, I think that speech from Mike Knubel pretty much confirmed what everyone else, a lot of people around the team thought, if you're looking for the guy to stand up and give the Mark Messier speech, or the guy who's going to pull someone aside and say, hey, this is, we need more from you, it's probably going to be him. I mean, everyone always says, the things that you always hear about Alex Ovechkin is that, he's not necessarily going to be a rah-rah guy, and, he leads by his example on the ice. And I think that's fine. And whenever he's playing like he did against the Rangers, where he's going out and, hitting people and just flying all over the ice, and the team definitely feeds off it. There's no question that when they see him going 100 miles an hour, that everyone else wants to too. I just wonder, when they see him doing some of the, kind of drifting into the defensive zone and some of the stuff he was doing late in that Tampa series, if they don't also feed off of that as well.
We're joined on the line by Corey Massasak of NHL.com doing a post-mortem on the Washington Capitals season. Now, Corey, one of the big acquisitions at the trade deadline was defenseman Dennis Wiedemann. Of course, he was out injured with the blood clot in his leg. How much did this team miss him in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they missed him a lot. I think once Mike Green was kind of he missed the end of Game 3 and all of Game 4. He may have actually been injured before that and was just trying to play through it. But at the same time, I think they probably missed him as much because they didn't have Tom Pody. I mean, this team was never going to have Dennis Weidman. They just didn't have the salary cap space. They only were able to get him because Tom Pody and Mike Green were injured at the trade deadline. I mean, it probably would have been a nice luxury to have, but at the same time, I think they probably missed, obviously they missed Pody and Green just as much or more. And I mean, that's a thing I think they're going to have to address for next season. They could have a pretty great top six if Tom Pody is able to play next year. I guess there's George McPhee said that, his career might be in jeopardy.
But if he's able to come back,
then you've got, Mike Green, Jeff Schultz, Carl Alsner, John Carlson, Tom Pody, and Dennis Weidman. That's a pretty good top six. The question is, what's behind those guys? Because that's a lot of money tied up into six guys, and they've got, this year they had, even during the regular season, they had problems when they got beyond six or seven. They had to go to guys like Brian Fahey and Sean Collins, and those aren't guys you necessarily want to have to rely on in an elimination game in the playoffs like they had to this year with Collins.
For our listeners who might not be aware, you mentioned Tom Pody has a career-threatening injury. Can you expand on that a little bit? What is that injury?
Yeah, he's had groin problems all throughout his career. I mean, he's missed, anywhere from, just a small handful to up to maybe 20 games a season when he's been with the Capitals, even, and I guess even before then, with groin problems. And this year he basically injured it. Maybe came back too soon, injured it again, came back a third time, kind of re-injured it, and basically McPhee came out and said the other day that they've sent him to a bunch of different specialists that had a bunch of different doctors look at him. None of them, they've all said that it's not something that can be corrected by surgery, but at the same time, he has been rehabbing it for months now, and he can never get it better to 80 or 85%. Like, he can't quite make that final step to where he can play. So they're worried that if he can't ever get back to being close to 100% again, what does it mean for his career? What does it mean for them? They just signed him to a 2-year contract extension during the season. So, I mean, if he were to have to retire, that would go away. But at the same time, if he can play, then you've got a guy who's not as good as he used to be, making almost $3 million a year. There's kind of a whole array of issues there.
Especially for a skating defenseman like Pody. Bruce Boudreau, I mean, got a lot of criticism for this series. Do you think he was outcoached, outcoached by Guy Boucher?
Yeah, probably at least a little bit. I mean, I can't imagine a team would win 4 straight games just on what happened, just because of the players. But I don't think it's quite as pronounced as it was last year. I think after that Montreal series, I think pretty much everybody who covered that series thought, man, it seems like Jacques Martin really outcoached Bruce Boudreau in the series. The power play struggled at the beginning of the series. It got a little bit better as it wore on, but, probably too little too late. Really, the series, for being a 4-game sweep, it was a lot like their first-round series. They won the first round in 5 games, and yet every game until the last one was basically a 1-goal game. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have a lead in 2 of the games they won. They just tied it up in the third period and won in overtime. So, the way that they lost was kind of pretty similar. I mean, the first 3 games were all very tight. 1-goal games, the season basically turned on, the 24-second span in game 3 where if they hold that lead and they play the next night, with the momentum carrying over, maybe it's 2-2 going back to Washington, it's a whole different series. But, that third period will probably haunt them for a long time because that was everything that people have said negatively about the Washington Capitals over the past few seasons. And their ability to play in the playoffs, all of it came to light in that third period.
Corey, we at Illegal Curve are pretty big fans of Bruce Boudreau, and obviously, we got to see how fun of a guy he is and how great of a coach he was in that HBO documentary. But do you think he'll be around next year?
It's hard to say at this point. I would lean towards yes because I think. The owner, the general manager, everybody in the organization have been pretty adamant about how much they like him and how loyal they are to him. The only thing I would say, though, is that maybe the decision has been made, but it certainly didn't sound like it from what George McPhee said the other day. He said, I expect him to be back. He's a great coach, yada, yada, yada. But the I expect him to be back thing, it wasn't basically last year after the Montreal series on breakdown day, he came out and was very adamant, like, look, he's our guy. you know, we have all the faith in him. Yeah, it's just a big long speech about how Bruce Boudreau was the coach of this organization, and then a couple of days ago it wasn't quite as strong. So I mean, I would say he may have been trying to diffuse any speculation that Bruce Boudreau still has a chance to be fired, but I don't think he necessarily diffused it.
You spoke of McPhee, Corey. I mean, how much blame does he deserve for the team's performance?
Who's that?
McPhee. How much blame does he? How much?
You know what? I mean, it's pretty hard to blame him. I mean, to be honest, he basically in the past 2 years, I said this to a few other people in a few other interviews, but I mean, if you look at that team that played the Pittsburgh Penguins 2 years ago, I mean, that was one of the best playoff series we're probably ever going to see. And they pushed the Stanley Cup champions to a seventh game and then got blown out in game seven. But for six games, they were right there with the Stanley Cup champions. And I don't think even the guys, I mean, even talking to a couple of guys who played for the Penguins at that point, I mean, that was, you know, of the first three rounds that they played, that was clearly the best team that they played. And if you look at the roster that they had for that series compared to the roster that they had, even without Tom Bodie and Dennis Wyman for against Tampa and against the Rangers, this is a significantly better team. I mean, the questions 2 years ago were, you know, they didn't have enough playoff experience yet. They hadn't learned all their lessons, and they didn't have enough veteran guys. And, I mean, since then, they've added, you know, Jason Arnott and Dennis Wyman and Scott Hannon and Jason Chimera and Mike Knubel. And, I mean, it seems like, to me, the supporting cast, if you look past the top four guys, the rest of that team that he's built, it's pretty impressive, and I don't know if he's going to be able to build a much better supporting cast around those four guys. And so the four guys being, of course, Ovechkin, Semin, Backstrom, and Green. I think he built probably about as good of a team as he's built in his 14 years there. And I'm not sure how much more you could really ask for him. I mean, I think they needed a number two center and a veteran defense center, too, mm-hmm. at the start of the season, and they went and got Scott Hannon, Dennis Wyman, and Jason Arnott, which, you know, maybe they weren't home runs, but they were all pretty solid acquisitions.
Does, you know, McPhee, I guess last question here, Corey, does McPhee keeping Boudreau, I mean, he gave Boudreau his first opportunity, there's obviously probably a sense of loyalty there, but also, I mean, it's not like the coach of the team isn't a Ken Hitchcock type or a Jacques Lemaire type, and they come in and they command the room, and they also have, you know, a certain amount of control, per se. Do you think that, you know, maybe psychologically a bit, that McPhee likes the fact that Boudreau is there because he maybe has a little bit more control than he'd have if he hired another coach?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, the core of this team, you know, there's 10, 12 guys that have been there. I mean, for the most part, they've only ever had Bruce as their coach right. in the NHL. I mean, they had some of them were around at the start of the at the end of the Glenn Hanlon era. And so, but for the most part, these guys have all, you know, kind of, all they've known is Bruce. And so, I mean, if you're going to evaluate everything that's gone wrong, it's hard to say. I mean, I think if George McPhee thinks it's the players and not the coach, then he's probably, you know, and he wants them, then he might have to make some changes. I mean, he's made it sound like, you know, just from his words the other day, he's made it sound like he thinks this team is good enough. They just had some bad bounces and some bad luck, and so maybe they'll do something similar to last year where they didn't make any radical changes after losing to the Canadiens. But, I mean, I think the biggest thing with Williamson and McPhee is that they look out around the rest of the league and you see all these guys who, you know, get fired, and they bring somebody else in who's been fired two or three other times, and it doesn't necessarily make it any better. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I feel like it's almost like the NFL and quarterbacks. Like people always say, you know, there's only seven or eight great NFL quarterbacks out there, and if you don't have one, then you're just shuffling around the rest of the deck. And I don't know if Bruce Boudreau deserves to be in that list of the top seven or eight NHL coaches. I mean, based on regular season success, he has been, but that's, you know, they haven't been able to do it in the playoffs, so I don't know. You know, if they get one more year to, as a group, to decide if they can do this or not, or if McPhee has to make some changes.
Corey Massasak of NHL.com, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Take care, Corey. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Boston-Philly. We got all the playoffs action still to come. And then the last half of the show, return of the NHL to Winnipeg. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Drew, you just hit me.
You were crumpling up a muffin, and we were about to get back on air.
There's a time, violence.
There's a time and a place for muffin crumpling, and that's not it. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We just heard from Corey Mastisak of NHL.com. Really gave some great insight into what the psyche and the on-ice performance of the Washington Capitals during the series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Still to come on the program this morning, Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. That's at 11 a.m. this morning to talk about the franchise status there in Atlanta.
The franchise you should all be watching now.
Very closely, the franchise you should all be watching.
Drew, I want to jump in here really quickly, and me and Richie were just talking about this off-air about Bruce Boudreau, and you know, Bruce Boudreau probably won't be back next year. And
well, according to you, we're a fan of his.
Yeah, I didn't know that you spoke for all of us.
I like Bruce Boudreau because, you know, he kind of looks like me, but he also, I'm just kidding, but he's got a style, old school style, but I think regardless if he is fired or comes back next year, that series cannot be placed on him or George McPhee. In my opinion,
think about it this way, though.
The players did not get it done in any of those games. It always boils down to the players. No, not always. Then why are we asking about the coaching?
A couple, because easier to fire a coach than 20. I said 20 players. But this is the thing. A couple of things. First off, I mean, you're happy for Bruce Boudreau. The guy was a minor league coach for a long time.
Right.
He got his NHL job. He's making some nice money now. It's good. Like, I'm happy for him. You know, it's not a personal thing. But think about it in terms of, you know, at a macro level. They get blown out. I know it was an eventual Stanley Cup champion, but if the series was so even, why'd you get blown out in Game 7?
I remember Pittsburgh, you're talking about a couple years ago. I was flying during that game, and I remember I landed,
and I checked the score, and it was like 5 or 6-0 in the second period. I forget exactly what it was. But they got blown out in that series, okay? So that was how it ended. Second round, blown out in Game 7. Next year, lose in 7 after being up 3-1 to the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
Then, the year after, get swept by a team that's not as good as them. So 2 years in a row, you've lost to teams that aren't as good as you talent-wise. Who does that fall on? Again,
and
obviously,
has to be the coach.
There's responsibility on the players. I understand that. But again, it's the old cliche. You can't fire all the players.
Richie, and he will might be ultimately fired for this reason, for whatever reason. And I truly believe that was why they lost, was because their top players, specifically Ovechkin, Semin, Backstrom, who everyone knows are their top players, they didn't get the message from Boudreau, or he wasn't able to motivate them. Period.
And the year before that, they lost to the Flyers in Game 7 overtime, and that was a series that I thought they weren't as good as the Flyers, and it was a coin flip, and they played well. So give credit for that. But they haven't got past the second round.
He's plateaued. I mean, at a point in time, he was the right coach for this team.
I don't think
he can take it over the next hump, though. I think it needs somebody different to take them to the next level.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
I mean, and that's no slight to him. He's done a great job with them. Granted, it's easy to do a great job when you have that much talent.
I also think, Drew, he'd probably be a better coach in a team with more internal leadership.
Sure.
Because he's more of
I agree 100%
he trusts his players.
That.
He gives them a lot of freedom. Some teams
he's
with
a quote
internal
unquote players coach.
Some team, yeah, exactly. Some teams with internal leadership, like, you know, guys like a Stevie Eisman, which don't grow on trees, mind you, but guys like that with like a Drew McGinley in his room, patrolling his room,
yeah,
it would be a lot different than it would be if, it's an Ovechkin.
Well, I think that franchise, if they bring back a guy like Arnott, would be interesting. If they bring him back for
the
next
problem
season.
With Arnott is that he talks, I mean, his name carries more value than his play on the ice. He's not great in the faceoff circle.
That's the problem. He was taking some
stupid penalties.
He doesn't move
the downside of his career.
Yeah. He doesn't move as well as he used
You're
to.
Right.
He's a fringe second line center. Remember this, guys. The Nashville Predators obviously don't have a lot of cap flexibility, but this is a team, as you guys have seen in the first round or in the second round here, doesn't exactly have a lot of explosive offense or offense in general. Jason Arnott traded from that team, and of course, what you have before that, you know, to the Devils, so I'm saying before the Devils, and, you know, JP Dumont.
These guys are evaluating talent. They know them probably better than the player teams acquiring them.
So when Nashville's getting rid of you, you might be that might say something about the, where you're at in terms of
that,
your talent level.
A team that can't score gets rid of a guy. I realize money is a factor, but a team that can't score gets rid of a guy who's supposed to be scoring. There's an issue there.
Did you kind of feel too, Richie, like you picked up Jason Arnott, but you've got Mike Knubel? So why? What is it? Jason Arnott's? You kind of Mike Knubel, I think, is a better version of Jason Arnott.
Different, but yeah.
Different, but I kind of felt like Jason Arnott's
leader,
role on Nashville
I can
was,
see your point.
He had a great role, but Jason Arnott, they expected him to do a lot more than he really could.
I can see your point there.
And the question also has to be brought up. Sure, Scott Hannon was a great addition to the team.
Yeah.
But Thomas Fleischman and kind of that second line offensive, now I realize Fleischman got injured in Colorado, but Thomas Fleischman and that second line offensive production.
It was a one-line team.
Shouldn't have been,
but it was.
But is Fleischman more of a better offensive player than Jason Arnott? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's unquestionable that Brooks Lake was their best forward in this year's playoffs. Well, he was there every single night.
He plays in all situations. He's a penalty killer. He's power plays. He's up front. But if you're relying on Brooks Lake to be that guy...
Well, if Brooks Lake is your best player when you have Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Semin, then no wonder you lose in a sweep in the second round.
You guys also said it. I mean, I forget which one of you said it earlier. I mean, it's St. Louis, Le Cavalier, and Stamkos outperformed the top three.
Exactly.
There's so many ways to slice it. You slice the coaching, you slice the fringe guys, you slice the defense, you slice the goaltending. But when your top players get outperformed, it's hard to win in this league.
And let's leave it there. When we come back, Boston, Philadelphia, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed the first hour, we were joined by Corey Massasak of NHL.com. Still to come on the program, we have Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province. That's at 11:30 this morning. At 11 o'clock this morning, Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is going to join us to talk about the Thrashers.
Winnipeg Thrashers.
Yeah, the Winnipeg Thrashers.
True story, Drew. Yeah. I was at, I'll show you guys this picture last night. As you know, I went to the Moose playoff game last night, Game 5 of the Calder Cup North Division Finals. The Moose lost. They got spanked. I touched the TELUS Cup yesterday. The Winnipeg Thrashers came on the ice during the first intermission. There's a picture of me and my boy Ken, who you know that my boss at work, and it's a great picture. I touched the TELUS Cup. Winnipeg Thrashers.
Isn't that for like 14-year-olds?
Yeah. Like
best AAA team in the...
Well, good for them, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, we're not criticizing the Thrashers. I'm just... Why would
I didn't say...
Why am I that excited that you touched a...
If you touched a Stanley Cup, I'd be like, that's cool.
It's a nice cup. It's a TELUS cup. It's a nice quality.
You touched a few beer cups after, too.
Yeah. And I think that therein lies the problem.
Alcoholism is not fodder for this show, boys.
Tweet us at Illegal Curve. Send us your comments on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Send us an email, drew@IllegalCurve.com. We'll be taking your phone calls later on in the program, 780-1290. The second half of the show will more or less be dedicated to the return of the NHL to Winnipeg and all the latest developments on that. In the meantime, though, let's talk about the Boston-Philadelphia series that also ended last night. Just a dominating performance by Boston, a 4-0 sweep, a disinterested, lackadaisical Philadelphia team playing with a goaltender that might as well not have been there. At some point in time, I mean, doesn't Paul Holmgren have to take the blame for this series?
Well, I mean, this all goes back, and we've talked about it on the show before, Drew. This all goes back, Yezzy, to last summer when Paul Holmgren, for whatever reason, acquired Matt Walker, signed Jody Shelley, re-signed Michael Layton.
Just an aside, Richie, why was Jody Shelley playing in the playoffs?
It's all of those,
he can barely skate.
All of those moves made no sense. Now, his core and the contract he signed Jeff Carter to and Mike Richards is a very good job. But we're talking about awful acquisitions last summer that did nothing to improve the team. I realize Mezeros in that trade, but he has a huge ticket for a fifth defenseman who ended up being higher up than that because of the Pronger injury and the play of some others. But, I mean, last summer was, he tried to address the 5-6. Sean O'Donnell, unfortunately, is not the player, even the player he was a couple years ago playing beside Drew Doughty. His foot speed is so poor that he backs up off the blue line so much that he either gives up a shot or he gets burnt when he stands up to a defenseman, to a forward. So, I mean, the last summer was when they needed to address an issue or two, and unfortunately, they didn't address any issues, especially the main issue, which was in net. Now, I realize they did offer Marty Turco a contract, and he turned it down. I think it was a 3-year contract, so quite stupid considering right now I believe he's on a 1-year deal in Chicago.
And how bad he was in Chicago.
He'll probably be a backup somewhere next year. But you know, why not? And I've talked about it so many times online, writing articles for Hockey Prospectus and such. Why has he never?
ESPN.
Why have they never looked at acquiring a guy like Thomas Vokoun? You know, why is that not somebody that they can make some cap room for? I don't know. What about acquiring a guy like Dwayne Roloson? I mean, where was the foresight here? At some point, this story gets old.
It's probably arrogance.
It probably got old in 1997 when they had Ron Hextall, all due respect, who was at the end of his career, and Gar Snow up against Detroit, and they were flipping the goaltenders in the finals. I mean, I remember when
they haven't had a good goalie since Ron Hextall, and this is what I'd like to chime in about as far as this series goes. I'm not even going to be that hard on Brian Boucher because Brian Boucher is
what he is.
Right, and he played poorly. He played poorly, especially in Game 3 when he let in two goals in the first minute and a half.
He played like Brian Boucher plays.
Right. He's not, out of all the starting goalies that were in the playoffs this year, he was the worst, clearly. I think you could make that argument. This was my major problem.
Interestingly, on that point, Luongo, Rinne, I mean, obviously Niemi and Howard aren't the best goalies, but there's a lot of good goalies in this playoffs. Continue, though. Yeah,
I think this is my problem. It wasn't just the goaltending of Boucher, because to me that really was... When you're letting in goals that early, the confidence of your team is just completely shot.
Yes.
And my problem was the way they had their goalies rotating, especially in these playoffs. Sergei Bobrovsky is your starting goalie all year. Okay, he's a young goalie. He's 22. He's from Russia. He's a very talented guy. You give Boucher some time, but then you get to the playoffs and Bobrovsky struggles. So you instantly, basically, Peter Laviolette says, "We're going with Boucher." Okay, and then Boucher struggles, and then you go with Leighton, and then you go back to Boucher. Okay, and that's fine. They got through the first round. They beat Buffalo in seven games. Fine, but why aren't you going back to Bobrovsky?
That's a good point.
Why is Boucher? Okay, I realize Boucher did a good enough job. His numbers weren't bad in the wins that he got for them against Buffalo, but you can't then and an aside of that is, why was Bobrovsky relegated to third string?
Didn't make any sense.
And then bring Leighton in, and then take Leighton back out into the third position, and then bring, like, why are you bringing Bobrovsky back as the backup?
All good questions.
All very good questions, Ezzy. But don't you, in the playoffs, don't you play your most talented players? And your most talented goaltender of the three is Bobrovsky.
And the question is,
not even close.
He's good enough to play in the regular season. Why is he not good enough to play in the playoffs?
Right. I mean, we know, you know, he's fine. He's young and fine. You don't know if he's able to stand up to the mental rigors of the playoffs.
Right.
But you know what Boucher is, and you know what Leighton is, and you know that Bobrovsky's better.
Now, obviously, Boucher last year and Leighton last year contributing to them going to the Cup. Obviously, there was an allegiance there. We also can't talk about Philadelphia without bringing up the fact that Chris Pronger.
Fine. But then even more so.
That is
when
huge.
Pronger goes down, that even hurts your... I mean, last year they were able to sort of hide their goaltending issues a little bit because Pronger was so good. And their defense was so good. This year, you know that Pronger's injured.
Yeah.
So isn't that even more incentive to play your most talented goaltender?
Guys, there's no question that the team really missed Chris Pronger. But when you look at the guys that were out there, Kimmo Timonen had a really bad series. Uh-huh. But Andre Mezeros, Matt Carl, Braden Coburn, those guys played very well. Even in a situation.
Carl's not trustworthy defensively, though.
Yeah.
But overall they played well. They were exposed. Kimmo Timonen, you know, he's starting to get a little bit older, and he was having trouble against Boston's bigger forwards. But you can't avoid games where Boucher lets in five goals, or lets in two goals in the first
minute. Let me ask this question.
Even the third goal yesterday, Matt Carl is standing at the line as he watches Milan Lucic gain ahead of speed and doesn't back off and just stands up. Like, it wasn't a good defense.
When you're standing flat-footed and you got a guy who can walk around you.
Let me ask this question. Like,
you know, we've outlined the moves that the Flyers made this summer that we didn't make any sense. Why do you trade a first and a third-round pick for Christopher Stieg at the trade deadline? You're telling me you can't go out and get a good goaltender for a third?
Remus, maybe go back to that show if we can pull it up and see what we talked about, why they wouldn't add to a weakness, not a strength. You know, they added to a strength, they didn't address a weakness.
And he was terrible. He wasn't any good.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Zampalipo.
He had maybe one good game in the playoffs.
His defensive turnovers and his poor defensive play really hurt them. Now,
you're telling me that for a first and a third, hell, throw in a second. You're telling me you can't get Thomas Vokoun for a first, second, and a third? Or you can't get Corey Schneider for a first, second, and a third?
Taking him in for the cap might have been an issue, but you'd be creative.
Exactly. Yep. So you send down Jody Shelley and you send down. I mean, Michael Layton's off your books. He's down in the minors. Yep. You figure it out. Yep. You're telling me that you can't for a first, second, or a third, or a first and third. You can't get Corey Schneider. You can't get Thomas Vokoun. You can't get a guy who's at least a serviceable NHL goaltender, as opposed to the garbage that they threw out there. With all due respect, they're garbage.
With this team, the window's closing too on the team. You know, Richie mentioned Mike Richards and Jeff Carter, those guys are signed long term. But really, they're not going to have. They don't have. They're going to have to figure this out, because now they came within one game or two games, if you want to look at it like that, of winning the cup last year.
Yeah.
And you could say that they're still young enough that their core is there, but Pronger's not getting younger.
No, their defense is getting older. Timonen and Pronger, but I mean, offensively, you're going to re-sign Giroux, and you've got Richards and Carter.
And that's why they've got to take advantage of that now.
You still have a top-notch offense. Nobody's disputing that. Offense is still one of the best in the league.
They have to get Thomas Vokoun or God forbid, Ilya Brizgalov in there.
But they won't get him. They won't. He's so stubborn. Paul Holmgren is so stubborn.
We'll be talking about the same thing next year.
Dreger was on with Hauser and Lalonde yesterday and said that the Flyers have never really been interested in Vokoun, and I just don't understand it.
Well, you don't want.
Why would you be interested in a really good goalie?
Yeah, why would you be interested in a talented goaltender that can make up for the fact that Chris Pronger is getting older, and the fact that Matt Carl is not responsible defensively, and the fact that Kimmo Timonen isn't as fast and skilled as he once was?
Yeah.
No, let's keep throwing out some guy that we're going to dig up out of Russia, play him all year, and then yank him when he has a bad game in the playoffs and replace him with the equivalent of an empty net.
I want to throw something in right now. Jay Onwright's use of Bobrovsky. I'm the biggest Jay Onwright fan. He used to work here in Winnipeg for City TV.
He woke me up this morning with his Legion of Doom.
He's the funniest guy out there right now. Jay, if you're listening, we've tried to get him on the show before. When he says, we got Bobrovsky on the case, I love it. I think it's the funniest thing ever. Good job, Jay.
He woke me up with his What a Rush this morning. Legion of Doom, Animal and Hawk.
Yeah, I understand.
What a Rush.
He does that every morning.
I'm pretty good. I'm a big WWE fan, Drew. I used to wear the replica belt and
That explains the spandex you're wearing right now. Yeah. That explains a lot of it and things, actually.
He's Drew and he's awesome.
Thank you, Ezzy. Yeah, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Detroit San Jose series, the Vancouver Nashville series. Lots more still to come. And, of course, return of the NHL to Winnipeg. We'll discuss that.
Portage and Maine.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Never went anywhere.
Good choice, Timmy. Detroit Rock City. Good work.
Timmy likes Kiss.
That works well, considering we're going to talk about Detroit San Jose. So well done, Tim. Attaboy. That's what we like to see. That kind of intuitiveness. How's that for a good word?
Which is a word that people use for whatever reason. It's not a word.
It's not a word. I love when society decides that a word that isn't a word gets used so often that it becomes a word.
Anti-disestablishmentarianism. Isn't that the longest word in the English language?
I don't think that's a word. I think you've just actually put three words together and made it into one word.
Is that actually a word, Ez?
I don't know. I mean...
Remus said it's a word.
Could be. Couldn't be.
Yes, it could be or it couldn't be. That is correct. Anyways, let's talk about Detroit San Jose and apparently long words. Detroit San Jose goes back to San Jose for Game 5 tomorrow evening. Does Detroit have it? It's been a close. Detroit, San Jose's up 3-1, but it really has been a close series.
San Jose looks good. I'm not saying that they're. I don't think they're going to lose, but Detroit has the ability to win, Drew. I mean, this is a team that, you take it game by game, and if San Jose is able to beat Detroit 3 in a row, there's no reason why Detroit can't beat San Jose 3 or 4 in a row.
This series, they don't look like the San Jose.
No.
I think it's time to put to rest, to put to bed the concept of the San Jose Sharks as these terrible playoff chokers. Because it's been, last year they got to the conference finals. They went out meekly last year, don't get me wrong. They got swept by Chicago, and it was not a very good performance. But, they're up 3-1 against Detroit, and they're on the verge. They should make it to a back-to-back conference final.
Yep.
I think it's sort of time to put that to bed, that the Sharks are these huge playoff chokers who can never get it done.
Well, they have been in the past. I mean, they played against teams like, remember, going back to playing against Calgary.
In
2004. They've always had the talent to do that. Now they're more talented than ever, though. They're really a loaded cast up front, and their back end, especially the Demers, Vlasic combination has really, really, really helped them.
Stepped up in the playoffs. We were very concerned about that all year, and they've stepped up.
It's a young tandem. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, they still have to finish the game here, but up front, Drew, they have a lot more talent, and that thing that really starts with Logan Couture.
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course.
He's a tremendous player. I think Ryan Clough always picks his game up in the playoffs, so does Joe Pavelski. You add Logan Couture in there, and you have your other big three, and you're looking at really just a deep team and a lot of ways to beat you. And I want to give credit, Drew, because you know what?
We talked about this earlier. Yeah,
I want to give credit to Joe Thornton, because Joe Thornton is playing a better game than I've seen him play in a while. He's producing more. He's competing more.
Yeah. You notice him.
He's still. I mean, there's still a lot of things he needs to, you know, to prove to me. But give him credit where credit's due. You know, if we're going to criticize him for certain things, let's give him credit. He's played a meaner style, a better, more competitive style, and he's producing offensively too. And I think that needs to be brought up.
I think the pressure seems like it's been lifted off his shoulders a bit because he's no longer relied upon to be, or that line is no longer relied upon to be the scoring line and the dominant line for the Sharks.
And I buy into that theory a bit, but at the same time, I mean, you watch him in whether it be the Olympics or prior to that, I believe in the World Cup. I mean, he wasn't counted on there, and he still really didn't produce. But obviously, that's against a higher level of talent. You're right, Drew, in that he's not the target of every single team's game plan now all the time. I mean, he obviously certainly is a target, but he's not the main target. The pressure is not solely on him, and I think that I think it's just his personality. I mean, that's just what he is. And now the guy happens to be a 120-point player for the most part, so that obviously bring the spotlight on him. But this year, didn't really produce as well offensively. If he's gonna put up not as good regular season stats and be better in the playoffs, then I mean that's fine with Dougie Wilson.
That's right. I mean, he's just not wired, and it's just his internal wiring. He's not wired to be the guy who takes the team on his shoulders and dominates everything. And now they're in a position, and it's a fortuitous position to be in, and full credit to the scouts and everything else and the drafters in San Jose for being in this position, but he doesn't have to be that guy anymore. They've replaced their first line with another first line, and it's not like these guys have really stepped back in their talent levels. They're still a top. Their number two line is the number one line on pretty much any other team.
They have three lines, really, Drew. That's the thing. They have three lines.
Yeah. Well, when you can cycle three solid lines,
you cycle out Couture, Thornton, and Pavelski, you're dancing.
That's right. Because it seems like Detroit. Nicholas Lidstrom played a whale of a game last night. No, just a fabulous game last night.
Sure.
But Detroit's defense is not. It probably can't handle the three lines that the San Jose's throwing out.
If Detroit's defense can't handle it, then nobody's defense is probably going to be able to handle it.
It seems so far.
Especially the remainder of the playoffs. I mean, Tampa and Boston's defense can't handle it. And, well, Vancouver has a chance, but Detroit's defense is like better. So.
But, Richie, it's not that surprising that San Jose is up 3-1. They were up 3-0 based on last year. It's not that shocking, but it is a little bit shocking that for the second year in a row, They're giving it to Detroit, and the games have been close, but aside from yesterday, obviously, but San Jose has been dominating the series, and Joe Thornton to me just looks like he's having fun out there, and he's motivated, and he can really feel it, and I think he likes the fact that like you said, Drew, that the big three of Marleau and Heatley and Thornton don't have to be the only guys, even though they split up on lines. But guy like Devin Setoguchi has really impressed me, and he's getting the overtime goals.
Thornton really embarrassed Jonathan Erickson on that game three game play.
Yeah.
Sorry, let's keep going.
Well, I mean, it's nice to see. I've never been a Sharks fan per se, or a guy that didn't think they'd do it, but I got to be honest, the way the playoffs have progressed, I really wouldn't be that surprised if it was a San Jose-Boston final. I don't think San Jose is going to get past Vancouver. But once again, the way they're playing, I wouldn't be surprised if we're expecting San Jose and Vancouver to obviously finish off the respective series and get there. But I wouldn't be shocked. I'm going to pick Vancouver, but I really wouldn't be shocked. I was shocked that Tampa Bay swept Washington, and I was shocked that Boston swept Philly based on how good Philly and Washington really are, but they really didn't get performances from their best players. In Philly's case, it was a goaltending, but Washington didn't get performances from their best players. But San Jose right now, I think, just like last year.
Detroit's playing a lot of leads, too.
Like, people forget, though, last year, San Jose ran up against Chicago in the conference finals. And you can argue that this year...
I don't think Vancouver's the buzzsaw that Chicago was last year.
Right.
I mean, I think San Jose's got a granted,
Detroit outshot San Jose yesterday 40-28, and Detroit was winning for most of that
game. That's what I wanted. That's
so that's a stat that tells you Detroit's controlling the play.
Yeah, but that's what I wanted to talk about. You know who's impressed me with his performance this postseason, at least this series, is Antti Niemi.
Yeah.
I think against the talented Detroit offense, Antti Niemi yesterday, I mean, I know they gave up 4 goals yesterday, but if it wasn't for some of the saves he made early on in that game, and I know it was 2-0 at the end of the first period, it could have easily been 3 or 4-0 because Detroit just dominated that play. Now, you would expect that Detroit should dominate the first period of a game where they're down 3-0 because they're the more desperate team, and usually the more desperate team dominates the course of action. That's a general sports rule. But Antti Niemi is really playing like the guy who won a cup with Chicago last season.
Guys, we're getting a week ahead of ourselves here, but if it is San Jose-Vancouver, which it very well looks like it will be,
yeah.
If the Sedins aren't playing well like they haven't played well, San Jose is going to beat Vancouver. They will. They're playing that well that if the Sedins don't bring their offensive game, Ryan Kesler is right now could be the Conn Smythe guy after 2 rounds, but...
Talk to me after four rounds.
The Sedins right now would probably be, in my opinion, have been. I realize that Henrik Sedin got an empty net goal and he had 3 points. But if Vancouver wants to go to the Cup final and this is going to be their first Cup, you know, this is their year, their destiny or whatever, those guys are going
to
have to bring it because
be
right now there's
see
nobody.
How the Sedins play
there's nobody on San Jose that isn't playing well right now.
Look, if Vancouver is the team we think they are, they take care of business on home ice tonight and then they win. Because, I mean, frankly, Tampa Bay, Boston, they're done. They're home. They're scot-free.
It's more so, Drew, you need the rest if you're going to a 7-game series in round 1.
Well, I'll tell you what. If San Jose is going to take care of business tomorrow, and you're Vancouver, every day helps.
The Vancouver-Nashville flight is not a short one.
No, of course it's not. If you're Vancouver,
probably a 5-hour flight.
I'm sure it's a miserable flight. It's a very long flight that Nashville is, you know, southeast. Vancouver, north,
and you're adding
west.
You know, 5 hours both ways. So
that's right. So you don't want to go back for game 6.
Fly first class. They're eating steaks, but even so, it's a more wear and tear in the body. You're going to game 6. You got to win this game tonight. You got to keep it short.
On home ice. You want to.
San Jose only played 6 in the first round, and they've had time. I mean, and they're rolling lines. Not Vancouver rolls lines too, mind you, and that obviously helps. But the way San Jose is playing right now, yes, they look like a better team right now. I would say absolutely that they look like a better team than Vancouver.
Tampa Bay, Washington. Tampa Bay, Boston. Interesting finals there in the Eastern Conference. Yes. First of all, it's interesting that we have no idea when that series is going to start right now.
No, and the NBA, I believe, generally starts rounds earlier.
Yes.
With third rounds, with second rounds still going on if conferences are complete. I don't believe the NHL does that. They wait until the whole thing is done.
So, I mean, we don't know when that's going to see.
I mean, we're going to be a game 5 for both of them. So, maximum, you know, probably beginning of next weekend probably, right?
You would think so at the absolute end. I mean, you figure game 5 in San Jose is tomorrow night. So if they win, then they travel back to Detroit for game 6, I would think Tuesday. Yeah.
So probably Boston, Tampa Bay might start Saturday if all these series go long. If these series both finish, they'll probably start Wednesday.
Well, do they move up the schedule?
Probably start Wednesday.
I would hope that they would move up the schedule. Why would you go black for a week?
It'd be stupid.
It would be very stupid.
But this is the same league that went, I think, black for like 6 days between Anaheim and Ottawa or something?
Something like that. Yeah. It was very
7 or 6 days.
And this is the same league that plays 3 games at the same time
the day before.
Have
you ever seen in your life?
It boggles my mind. What do you mean there's 1 game on one day and 3 games all at the same time?
Yeah, 2 at 6
day.
At 1 at 7. Yeah, okay. Thanks for letting us watch, you know, parts of each game and not actually get to see everybody. That's just poor scheduling. I don't understand it. There's no reason. I mean, the day before, they had Tampa Bay start at 5:30 local time in Winnipeg, and then the next game at 8.
That was the Vancouver-Nashville game started.
Exactly the way you're supposed to do it.
Why did that start at 7:30?
Nothing started.
Game 4 of Vancouver-Nashville started at 7:30, our time.
Well, because it's 7:30 in Nashville. Nashville's in the central time zone.
Yeah, but why didn't it just start at 7? I don't get the...
Well, obviously
hockey games always start at the top of the hour.
Not always.
Almost always.
Games always used to be at 7:30. Yeah,
except for Saturday night games.
Remus is shaking his head at you with a lot of disdain through
Saturday
the other
night game.
I'm going to put both of you guys on the spot. Who did the Jets used to play during the... We always used to go to... My family always used to go to New Year's Eve games. Who did the Jets always used to play on New Year's Eve?
I don't think it was always the same team.
It was. Boston Bruins.
Really?
Look back on who they used to play on.
Remus, get on that.
Remus, can you confirm that for us? Because we don't go telling that stat.
Why don't you check on your BlackBerry?
Oh, wait. Hold on. Back in the day, Chi-Chi's or Fingers?
Chi-Chi's for me.
My dad hated Chi-Chi's fingers, 100%. Yeah. The bread basket before
the truth of the matter always is fingers. Chi-Chi's
and the buffalo heads on the wall.
Yeah. We used to go to the, our gambling correspondent here on Illegal Curve, Ari Baum Cohen. Our families used to go to the games together, so they were always a Chi-Chi's family. That's how we ended up at Chi-Chi's.
What about Eastside Mario's?
Bada boom,
la,
bada bing.
La, 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 la.
Let's la, la, la. Our way to the commercial break.
Okay, stop la. It. Keep going. You can talk while I'm doing the background. Okay, come on, help me.
They better be sponsoring
us. You've got to take the commercial.
They're not in Winnipeg, so I don't think they're sponsoring us.
There's no.
They used to be in Madison Mario's? Square.
They used to be in then it was Madison Dells.
That's right.
No. Madison Dells?
And you ate them out of business, Madison Dell.
Yeah, Remus is giving me the thumbs up on the Madison Dells.
I remember that. They had big cakes in the front.
Yeah, yeah, there was big a big display of cakes. Yeah.
What was your favorite, Drew? Did you like a chocolate?
You know that.
Coffee cake?
I like anything. I like
sponge?
A tort? Are you a tort guy?
Richie, you're definitely a tort guy with your law degree.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good pun, Ezzy. Nicely done. Give me
I can't believe Ezzy, you didn't get that one. Now I tell you that one, unfortunately.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show.
Pie? You like
pie?
No, I don't like pie. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.